Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, our next guest, you know, I feel like the world needs to just stop and take his advice.
Listen to Bo.
Exactly. He is a two-time world champion debater, former coach of the Australian National Debating Team and the Harvard College Debating Union. He's got a new book out.
Bo So is a journalist and an author. The book is called Good Arguments, How Debate Teaches Us to Listen and Be Heard. Bo joins us now via Zoom from Washington, D.C. Bo, I want to get to the book in just a second, but how take us through your journey because it's really interesting. How did you become a two-time world champion for debating?
Well, thanks so much for having me on the program. I started debating because I moved as a kid from South Korea to Australia without speaking a word of English. And I quickly found that the hardest part of doing that was adjusting to real life conversation where people can kind of mid-sentence change directions and spin you out. And the way I kind of got over the shyness and the conflict aversion I felt was by joining the debate team off the strength of a single promise from my elementary teacher, which was that when in debate, when one person speaks, no one else does. And to someone who had been used to being spoken over and interrupted and taken out of conversation, that seemed to me a kind of a life raft. And I've really been riding it ever since.
Man, it's just so relevant. It's such, you know, we have producers who get in our ear like, crosstalk, like let the person be heard. But it there is a bigger message here, right? In terms of an environment that we sit in today where you can't have differing opinions. Nobody wants to hear it. And everybody just kind of shouts and yells at each other. You know, how do you think about the world today and what ails us?
Well, we're living at a time of really extraordinary polarization. And it's easy in times like that to see disagreement as the source of our troubles. And what I'm trying to suggest with this book is disagreements can be a force for good. Not only because they're useful in terms of finding out truths and ensuring people are heard and we can be honest and frank and forthright with each other, but more importantly, because good arguments are what good democracies are, they're what good workplaces are, what good families are, that we, despite our differences, resolve to live together. And instead of ignoring our differences, to put them in conversation with one another with the hope that we might be able to get somewhere deeper, somewhere better, somewhere richer than we might be able to on our own. So my hope with this book is to restore people's confidence in what disagreements can do and hopefully to give them a few skills that are going to allow them to handle them a little bit better too.
I think that one thing that keeps people back from expressing disagreement in the workplace is perhaps the way that we interpret how other people are going to take that disagreement, the idea of people taking conflict personally. So Bo, what's a good way to, you know, how should people express themselves in a way where they get to that better place by disagreeing with one another?
I think that's a really important question. And debate is such a big part of the workplace now, isn't it? Because the nature of modern white collar work is just we sit around in meetings and disagree all day. And I think the book gives a few different pieces of advice for someone in that situation. I think the first is you want to be really clear what the disagreement is about, right? And to say we're just having a conversation about this hire or about this business plan, as opposed to all the other disagreements that we might have flying around. As soon as there's that kind of imprecision about what the conversation is about, it tends to become unruly and it tends to bring in personality. It tends to bring in all the things that has happened in the past. So the first thing I would say is every disagreement starts with an act of agreement, and that's often about what the discussion is about. The next thing that I'd add is you want to have the kind of rules that we started our conversation with. So in competitive debate, you know that everybody gets equal time in which to speak. They're not interrupted while they're speaking, and they're given turns so that when I speak and I give you a chance to speak, there's no need for me to interrupt because I know I'm going to get a turn back. And restoring some of those basic rules, I think, can make many of those conversations go more productively.
Is a big part of this, too, is that there doesn't have to be a winner or loser in the conversation or in the debate?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that you learn as a competitive debater is wins and losses are temporary. You know, just the way it is in the workplace, you might take a W in this particular conversation or a loss in this particular conversation, but your coworkers aren't going anywhere, right? And so they're going to be back the next day or the next week, the next month with a different issue where you're all going to be on different sides, sometimes allied, sometimes on opposing sides. So I think the real lesson, in addition to taking seriously the need sometimes to prevail in arguments and to stick up for yourself and to carry your message, is to recognize what we all need is a set of rules, a set of practices that allows us to keep the conversation going in the long term and for the betterment of our organizations and for the betterment of ourselves.
I have to, you know, I think about presidential debates or political debates. Like, do you watch them and you say, well, this isn't a debate, this is just a show? No, seriously, right? Like, because people don't have a chance to kind of say things. There's constantly somebody jumping in and... that's not a debate, or is it?
I think that's exactly right. I don't think they are debates. And something isn't a debate just because it's called a debate or because two people are standing at an awkward distance from each other at different podiums, right? And I think often what happens in those debates is one or more of the participants turns what would otherwise be a debate into a kind of a brawl, right? Where it's a kind of a shouting match or a name-calling game. And it becomes really important in those moments to pause, as you said, at the top of the program, to say, to identify what is happening, to name the kinds of tactics that are being used, whether it be name calling and something like that, and to say, is it a debate that we're having or is it something else? Because without that kind of a check, what begins as a debate can devolve into something worse. And we see that not only on the presidential stage, but we see that around the kitchen table with our families and our loved ones. Yeah. And we see it at workplaces all the time.
We're going to continue the conversation. Bo, sit tight for a second. We've just got to do a little bit of news. I have to say, I love in just reading some of the prep materials that, you know, it was because as a shy kid, like this was giving, as he talked about, you know, debate gave him a safe space where he could be heard. And I have to say, I'm one of seven people who listen to our show or watch it know that. And I was a really extremely shy kid, probably hard to believe at this point, but
yeah, I don't believe
I
it.
Was. And in college, got into radio because it was an opportunity for my voice to be heard. Nobody could
I
interrupt
love that. I
me. Yeah.
Until you met me. And then I can just interrupt you all the time.
You're very kind. You're actually very gracious.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I want to get right back to Bo So. He's a journalist. He's an author. He's got a brand new book out. It came out this week. It's called Good Arguments, How Debate Teaches Us to Listen and Be Heard. He's got some great tips in here on how to not just be heard, but how to listen, because that's a really important part of any debate. Bo, Carol and I were talking about where we wanted to take this, and we both, you know, said at the same time, social media is what we want to talk about, because, you know, there's the idea of getting stuck in a canoe with somebody on Twitter and you just can't get out of it. This idea of you get in an argument, you have anonymous people replying to you. How do you deal with this on social media? Do you just get off, you just ignore it and just close it up and say, I'm not even going to participate? Because that's what I feel like doing sometimes.
Yeah, I think the, you know, one thing about being a debater is it makes you very sensitive to the acoustics of the room that you're talking about and that you're talking in. And social media presents a lot of challenges in that regard, whereas in a kind of a face-to-face conversation, you're being heard equally. On social media, the most divisive content tends to be prioritized. Even though I'm debating you or talking with you, it's sometimes for the benefit of an audience, right? And it's actually kind of talking past you in that way. So I actually tend to think that social media, the way it's currently designed, is pretty inappropriate for the kind of debate that I'm advocating. And that in that regard, you know, it may well be that social media has other contributions to make, whether it be finding out information, or it may actually be quite good at gathering like-minded communities, which it seems to do with extraordinary effectiveness. But I'm suggesting that there may be other better channels, such as face-to-face conversation and public discussions, to be able to have the kinds of disagreements that I'm advocating for.
You know what, Bo? What kind of ticks me off sometimes is when someone, I'm having a discussion, we don't agree, and then the person just says, well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree, and then it's done. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like, you just stopped the conversation. Like, that to me is not productive either. So help me. Like, you have a chapter, How to Know When to Disagree. So help me here. Yeah.
I agree with that completely. And it does feel like a kind of resignation, doesn't it? And a vote of no confidence, not only in oneself, but in the other person, because it is kind of saying to you, I don't trust you to be able to handle this conversation very well. And I think the need for that declines the more of us and the more of our population develops the skills of good argument. But that's not to say that you should be arguing about everything under the sun either. And in the book, I provide a kind of a checklist. I call it the RISA checklist, where I encourage people to ask whether the disagreement in front of them is real, whether it's important enough, whether it's specific, so you're not talking about everything in one go, and whether the two sides are aligned in their objectives for the having the discussion. And that's a kind of a way to stop us from jumping into a dispute out of defensiveness or pride, but rather to be a little bit more deliberate. But I share the concern exactly that that when they say, you know, let's just agree to disagree, or even just sort of nod politely and wear a smile that's not really a smile. It's a kind of, you know, a decision not to be involved with the other person.
Right? And to take a relationship further. It feels dismissive.
Exactly. And it's the kind of standing at a distance, you know, that I fear, perhaps even worse than just outright conflict, because then you can see the differences between people, is when we have contempt for one another, when we stand at a distance from one another.
But what about when it comes to bad faith arguments? If somebody is, you know, is making a bad faith argument, and I'm, you know, thinking of Washington, D.C.
You mean lying?
Yeah, I'm really thinking of politics.
Yeah.
And well, what we've
me
seen.
Too.
Yeah, I know. I'm not even going to hide it. But what do you recommend to people who actually want to get something done in Washington? How should they be approaching these discussions, these arguments?
I think the first and most practical step that I recommend in the book is to understand the tactics of bad faith debaters. And one of them, as you say, is lying. And one thing about liars is they don't just lie once, they lie many times, right? In a deluge that kind of overwhelms you. And one of the things that debaters know to do is to pick a representative lie to fit it in with other things that we know to be true, to show why it's inaccurate, and then to explain why that's kind of symptomatic of how that person is approaching the discussion. And again, to return to a point we made earlier, it's a way to pause and to say, this kind of tactic is unacceptable in the discussions that we're having. Of course, those tactics on their own are not going to be enough to deal with a lot of the problems of bad faith that we have, but they are individually empowering, and they are a way to restore the conditions of debate.
I think one challenge here, and again, I'm thinking about Washington, is a lot of these bad faith arguments happen when there's really no other side to debate that person, because everybody lives in their own universe these days. So you have, you know, people go on primetime talk shows on certain networks, for example, and they're not challenged necessarily to a debate. They're kind of just allowed to say whatever they want. And then that clip goes viral and they get their point across. And that's the world that we're living in. So how does somebody on the other side then, you know, respond to something like that?
I think your diagnosis, I agree with completely, that misinformation, that extreme views flourish in situations where there's no person to challenge them, right? And where it's like-minded people egging each other on. So part of the argument that I'm making is there should be more debate day to day, right? And so I think we're often losing confidence in our ability to persuade other people, in our ability even at Thanksgiving dinner to challenge a relative, to have a conversation about their beliefs, or to be able to do that in schools, in other settings. And I think that's...
Don't hate me because I'm interrupting you because we're running out of
please.
Time.
But, no.
But Tim and I are like kind of behind the scenes. It's like, you know, the conversation made after right now for not banning guns, because people are saying, well, we didn't ban airplanes after 9/11.
Yeah, Steve Scalise said that.
Like, it's ridiculous. So how do you have an intelligent debate around that? And we've only got about 30 seconds left. We'll have you back at
30 seconds. I think the best thing you can do is to set a single topic to say, here is the narrow issue within the broader universe of things we could be talking about, to take turns, right, to guarantee people an equal opportunity to speak and to hold them accountable on what they say, and to pursue each idea fully rather than letting people slide across different positions.
So much fun, so engaging. What, Tim?
Who would have thought that a two-time world debate champion would be such a great guest on Bloomberg Business Week Radio?
Our producer, Paul Brennan.
Of course.
So great
Good
to
stuff.
Have you here. Boso, thank you so much. Check out his book, Good Arguments, How Debate Teaches Us to Listen and Be Heard. Folks, this is what we need. Have a good and safe evening. I'm Carol Master along with Tim Stenovic. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.